Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Dr. Richard Behnken. And he is an author, and he's also an independent human rights activist. One of his books that he wrote is called A Quiet Case of Ethnic Cleansing, The Murder of Bangladesh's Hindus, and What is Moderate Islam? A website is interfaithstrength.com. Now, normally on this program, we focus on issues of importance to Christians, and this is not directly in that category, and yet in the big picture, it certainly can be viewed that way. Dr. Behnken, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Pleasure is mine, Doctor.
Okay. And first of all, as America has debate about the borders and, you know, what is our country and who is allowed to come in and who is not allowed to come in and how do we deal with illegal immigrants attempting to, you know, break through the borders. I understand that the border between India and Bangladesh, which used to be West Pakistan, and East Pakistan, and then also India, which borders East Pakistan, which is now called Pakistan, that there's some conflict that they've had as well.
Yes, sir, that's correct. And it really does frustrate me when I hear people talk about borders who don't really get the implications of not having control of your own borders. I've spent more than a dozen years in South Asia, and I have seen the slow but very steady change that occurs when a country does not maintain control of its borders. There's also, by the way, a very porous border between India and Nepal. Nepal, by the way, which is ruled by a communist party.
Wow. Just real fast, as far as India is concerned, in 1947, as the British were leaving, they carved out parts of India and they said, okay, these are going to be a Muslim country, East and West Pakistan, because there's just so many Muslims there and the Muslims and the Hindus don't get along. Explain about that, and then how does Bangladesh fit into that category like 20 years later?
Yes, sir. Okay. Pakistan actually is what we would call a polyglot state because there were so many different peoples that were forced into it, and supposedly they would have some commonality because they are predominantly Muslim. Actually, I'm working with several of them now who are trying to regain their right to self-determination from Pakistan.
Wow. And so basically, though, what happened was East Pakistan and West Pakistan existed primarily, again, for Muslims to live
right
there. And then it was very difficult as Muslims who were living in India at the time trying to make it into one of the sides of Pakistan. Some of them would be killed on the way by Hindus. And the same problem happened with, there was fighting on the border either way. So a Hindu trying to get out of Pakistan had trouble, and a Muslim trying to leave India to go into Pakistan was having trouble.
Yes, that's correct. Then that was, as you say, 1947. Then in 1971, the non-contiguous part of Pakistan, known as East Pakistan, broke away and became the nation of Bangladesh. And the primary basis for that revolution was that, geez, just because people are Muslim doesn't mean they all share the same identity and they're all going to be good to one another. In fact, the Bengali people, who are the predominant ethnic group in East Pakistan or Bangladesh, were terribly persecuted terribly by the West Pakistanis. And that's what led to them breaking away.
You know, I didn't even realize until you said it that obviously the word Bangladesh must derive from Bengali. That makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so where are we today? I mean, we're talking about 1971, 1947. Where are we today as far as Muslim-Hindu relations in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh?
Okay, well, the segment is only few minutes long, so I'll try and be brief because that is quite a complicated subject. However, most specifically, I like to point out that while the Muslim population has grown and continues to grow in India, the Hindu population has been dwindling terribly in both countries, both Pakistan and Bangladesh. I wish we had easy answers, because it's most of the people in the State Department and places like that like to look at Pakistan as a bad Muslim country and Bangladesh as a good Muslim country. Well, it's really not that simple. Bangladesh very quietly has become more and more subject to some of the radical groups that we see in Pakistan as well. In fact, I remember a few years ago, I gave some people information that some contacts of mine had shown me a house in Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, that ISIS was actually using, people associated with ISIS was actually using. And a couple years ago, by the way, people took me to a similar place in Calcutta, in India. So these things tend to be getting worse, tend to be growing. And I might add, when I mentioned Bangladesh and India, I really do believe a lot of that has to do with the fact that there has been no control of that border between India and Bangladesh, and certainly we don't want to have that happen here.
Okay, you used the phrase Hindu Holocaust. Are the Hindus the actors, or are they the victims when you use that phrase? And what are you talking about specifically?
Yeah, Hindus are the victims. When India and Pakistan were partitioned, Hindus represented almost a third of the population of East Pakistan. When East Pakistan became Bangladesh, they were just under a fifth. 30 years later, 9%, and today probably somewhere around one out of 15.
Wow.
Throughout that entire period, we have had a really steady stream of atrocities against them by their Muslim neighbors. Now, I will say Bangladesh is the country is not the government is not the one perpetrating these actions. However, their complicity lies in that these actions have been able to proceed for the last several decades with virtual impunity, and that's still what's going on.
Okay, so there's no protection by the Muslim government of Bangladesh to help those who are Hindus who are trapped there in Bangladesh, and who, by the way, I mean, their families might have lived there for literally centuries. So let me ask you this, though. Where do Christians fit in all this, both India and then the two partitioned nations, is now Pakistan and what is now Bangladesh?
Well, of course, when we talk about Pakistan, Pakistan takes a dim view of the Christian population. Christians have been persecuted in those areas. Bangladesh, they also have a small Christian population. Recently, however, they've been subject to more atrocities and the sort of things that have been happening to Hindus, in that the government doesn't do these things, but they seem incapable or unwilling to stop them. We know in India there's been a lot of contention. I happen to know Prime Minister Modi, and I believe he is a man of faith. However, we know there's a great deal of contention for Christians in India as well.
I understand that this current Prime Minister of India wants to make India virtually, 100% Muslim, 100% Hindu, which is bad news for the Muslims, and certainly bad news for the Christians, and it would be bad news for the Sikhs as well and other small, minorities.
Yeah, I know Prime Minister Modi. I've known him for a number of years, and I really do not believe that that's his goal, nor do I think it's a very practical goal for any prime minister to take, let alone the issue of right and wrong, of course.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. By the way, I once read a statistic, and this is amazing because Pakistan is primarily a Muslim country. I once read a statistic that India, which is so populated, the second most populated country in the whole world, there are more Muslims in India, even though there are, obviously a small minority in one sense, of the total population of India. There's more Muslims in India than there are in Pakistan. And, that's like, whoa, you've got to be kidding me.
That's right. That's why when people throw around phrases like genocide and ethnic cleansing of Muslims, I like to point out that the Muslim population in India has been growing, whereas the Hindu population in Pakistan is down to 1% now.
And you're saying that about Pakistan, whereas you said earlier Bangladesh, it would be one out of every 15 people would be a Hindu. So it's that's clearly a lot more than 1%.
Right. For Bangladesh, it's about 7 to 8%. The statistics aren't as clear as they once were. But I do point out, in both countries, the Hindu population has been dwindling.
Okay, so what prompted you to write that book, A Quiet Case of Ethnic Cleansing, The Murder of Bangladesh's Hindus, and What is Moderate Islam? I guess that's a separate book, but...
Correct.
Yeah, tell us about that. Tell us about both your books.
Okay, the first book, what motivated me was very simple. I had been to Bangladesh quite a number of years ago. There was a journalist who was charged with blasphemy and in prison and tortured. I had gotten him released. And while I was there, I did a lot of talking and listening, and I saw that there was some problem for religious minorities there. And when I got back, I received a fax from an individual who basically said to me, I live near Calcutta. My family brought me here when I was age 11. My people are dying in Bangladesh. Please help us. Well, you can't turn your back on that. You have to take a look at it. And what I found was, number one, that in fact is true. The population's dwindling, and we can tie that to a continuous flow of atrocities, number one. Number two, look, I'm just one guy. I don't have a big organization. I'm just one guy, and I felt... Look, when I'm Jewish, when my people were being murdered, one of the complaints that we talk about is how many people in the world just stood by and did nothing. Well, I don't want to be doing the same thing of which I accuse others. And so I felt I had to do something, and that's when I got involved. The other thing, by the way, that I found was, despite this, no one's doing anything about it. No one was making it an issue. No one was saying anything about it. And I felt that someone had to. And that's how I got involved with that.
Okay, that book is called A Quiet Case of Ethnic Cleansing, The Murder of Bangladesh's Hindus. Okay, and before we get into what is moderate Islam, just real fast, you mentioned the charge of blasphemy. What is that and why is that significant? Briefly.
Very briefly. The charge is launched rather indiscriminately against different authors and others who might utter words that would offend Muslims, particularly religious Muslims or radical Muslims. And the problem with that is, of course, it's a terrible chill on free speech, freedom of expression. And it's used against people who are going to push back against radical Islam or those things that enable people to let radical Islam exist.
Right. Okay.
It's very dangerous.
Yeah. No, I see. Because it's like if you're accused, you're virtually guilty. Okay. We have 20 seconds left. What is moderate Islam? 20 seconds left.
We have to get away from binary thinking. Not all Muslims are jihadis, and we can't ignore the very real tie between Islam and radical Islam.
Okay, and we'll leave on that point, but I'll refer people to your website, which is interfaithstrength.com. Dr. Richard Bentgen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it, doctor.
All right, all the best. Bye-bye.